Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Millions of us have marched in protests, signed petitions, and spoken to politicians, but with little impact. We have not changed the world. You wouldn't think that those words would have come from a social activist, but they do. Well-known social activist Dave Andrews. He's written that in the first page of his book, Plan B. He's raising the questions. When we do all of this activism and it doesn't work, what's gone wrong? The rest of the book is pretty much an answer. Dave Andrews, good to have you on Open House. Welcome again.
Nice to talk to you again.
So what's gone wrong? Interesting to start the book with that kind of quote. What has gone wrong?
I think what's gone wrong is that we've assumed the problem with the world is other people. To change the world, we need to change others. And in order to change others, we need to coerce them. And I believe that that whole approach is flawed and is counterproductive.
So everybody who kind of has this social justice heart or just a heart to see the world changed in some kind of way, it might be in a Christian way, people coming to faith in Christ, it might be in a way that says we're going to stand against oppression or whatever, you're saying let's take a step back and see how we need to change first?
Absolutely. After all, Jesus said you should take the log out of your own eye before you try and take the speck out of somebody else's. In fact, he says, you need to help other people at all. You need to take the log out of your own eye before you can see clearly enough to take the speck out of somebody else's. I think the tendency has always been to kind of project the blame onto others and then to project the responsibility on others to change and then look for strategies and tactics to make them change in the way that we would hope that they would.
Okay, well, I want you to give us some just an example as to what you're talking about here. Out of, I guess, the title of the book, you've called it Plan B, that's B-E, Plan B, to actually become. Describe Plan A, describe Plan B, and ground it in some kind of example for us.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a classic example of Plan A is our dear brother George Bush, who said, you know, the problem with Iraq is there's no democracy, so we'll bomb them into democracy. We'll make them change by invading their country, which just makes them mad at you. And takes us back to the Crusades. So it's a counterproductive strategy, but a lot of Christians have supported that. However, I think a totally different approach is the approach of Gladys Staines, who's an Aussie whose husband and children were burnt alive by fanatics, and rather than trying to make them change, she saw that as a challenge for her to change her attitude to fanatics and to forgive them. And so she extended forgiveness to her killers rather than sending in warplanes to seek revenge. And the consequence of that change in her life was that it invited other people to change. And a whole range of militants actually made the trek to her house and responded to her willingness to forgive by asking for forgiveness and seeking reconciliation.
Yeah, and for people who didn't catch the story, the Staines were missionaries in India, and it was militant Hindus who actually, yeah, set fire to the car that her husband and son were actually sleeping in one particular day and killed them, and yet she forgave them.
So I think there's a clear contrast. You have Uncle George kind of saying, we need to change them, and if they won't change voluntarily, then we'll make them change. And then you've got Auntie Gladys saying, no, it's not about changing them, it's about us being changed, becoming more Christ-like ourselves, dealing with our own issues of anger and rage and revenge, and then we can engage people in a much more creative and constructive way and invite them to be a part of the process of change.
Mm-hmm. So in terminology, I guess you've got it here in the book, Plan A, treat others like they treat us, and Plan B, treat others like we'd like to be treated ourselves, the old golden
rule. Absolutely. That's a great way of summarising it.
Okay. So this golden rule that, of course, is well known to be the golden rule that Jesus uttered, and, of course, he had paraphrased it from other sayings that were around about the same time. Now, you base the rest of this book, Plan B, on the Beatitudes, those famous sayings that Jesus has in his famous Sermon on the Mount. Now, why do you go there when it comes to then starting to ground our lives in the golden rule?
I go there for a number of reasons. I think when we're asking ourselves, how can we respond to a world characterized by poverty and violence? one of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, what is there within our religious traditions that can inform our understanding of engaging the world creatively? And recently, 137 Muslim scholars, imams and clerics said, look, Christians, Muslims and Jews make up a majority of the world's population, and unless we find a way of living with each other, we'll kill each other. But the question is, what do we have in common? And what do we have in common that we can treat as sacred ground for engaging our world creatively and constructively? They said, we're all aware of the differences, and we don't want to overemphasize the similarities. But one thing that we all have in common, whether we're Muslims or Christians or Jews, is that in our scriptures it says we're called to love God with our whole heart and to love our neighbor as ourselves. Mm-hmm. Why don't we start there? So it's really clear that that's the place to begin for us to begin to love God with our whole heart and love our neighbor as ourselves. However, it's one thing to say, it's another thing to do that. I mean, how do we love other people the way that we would love ourselves in a world characterized by poverty and violence? It's kind of warm and fuzzy and nice and fluffy, but it's not hard-edged enough. And I think what Jesus was trying to do in the Beatitudes was actually give us a clear, concise, concrete set of instructions to show us how we could do that in a world that's characterized by so much brutality and cruelty. And the Beatitudes are a kind of step-by-step instruction guide to help us to see how we can step out into the reality of our world and engage it in a way that is truly Christ-like and that can embody something of the kingdom of heaven on earth.
This is Open House, and you're listening to Dave Andrews, well-known activist. He's written this book called Plan B. We're talking about the Beatitudes, those statements of Jesus in his well-known Sermon on the Mount, that talk about how we can actually be the change that we want to see in the world. Theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast. Okay, Dave, let's work our way through some of those Beatitudes then. I'll give you one of the famous statements and you can unpack it a little bit. Jesus said, blessed are the poor.
Yes, well, it's very interesting that there are two versions of this Beatitude. In Luke, it said, blessed are the poor. In Matthew, it says, blessed are the poor in spirit. I believe what Jesus is saying here is, but blessed are those who are not addicted to fame and fortune and success, but either are poor or identify with this poor in spirit. And I think what Jesus is saying, wouldn't it be a much better world if we didn't focus on the lives of the rich and famous, but actually were mindful of those that were poor and were with the poor in spirit? In fact, Jesus says, in the rest of that Beatitude, blessed are those that are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Mm-hmm. If we want to see the kingdom of heaven come on earth, I believe we need to be concerned about how we can embody the good news in the spirit of Jesus with the poor and the poorest of the poor.
Okay, blessed are those who mourn.
I think if we identify with the poor in spirit, we'll enter into their pain, we'll enter into their suffering, and we will feel afflicted like they are. So we will naturally enter into their pain empathically and weep with those that weep. So I think it's a natural next step that if we identify with the poor in spirit, then we will mourn with those that mourn.
Mm-hmm. Anybody who has actually experienced third world poverty will understand that. You start to mourn when you see what you've seen.
Yeah, well, first world poverty or third world poverty, I mean, all poverty is painful. And if we identify with people who are struggling or suffering, whether it's here or abroad, we will enter into that suffering ourselves. I mean, compassion literally means to suffer together with others.
Good point. Blessed are the meek.
This is an interesting one because we associated the word meek with weakness. Meekness is weakness for many of us. But the word meek there actually doesn't mean weakness. It means controlled strength. It was the word used to describe animals that had been domesticated, particularly wild stallions that had been tamed. So all that visceral energy was now under control. And I think what Jesus is saying here is, blessed are those that identify with the poor in spirit, who enter into their pain empathically and weep with those that weep, and they get angry about the injustice done to them, but don't get aggressive. They have their rage under control, and they use the energy that it releases to act creatively and constructively.
Interesting. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness.
One of the ways I think Jesus wants us to express our rage at injustice creatively and constructively is to hunger and thirst for justice. The word righteousness there would be better translated as justice. So he's not commending personal piety, although personal piety is something good that we should aspire to, but here he is the word that encourages us to aspire to social justice. So if we identify with the poor in spirit, we enter into their pain, we get angry about their injustice, then it's a natural consequence that we will actually seek to hunger and thirst for justice alongside them.
It very much is kind of a social justice reading of the Beatitudes that we have here in many ways, isn't it? I mean, for many people, it'll be kind of, oh, this is a different way to interpret them, to understand them, given the interpretation you've just given there on blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, or even say blessed are those who mourn. Often we have read those as being very personal things.
Yes, that's right. But I wouldn't say this is a social justice interpretation. I'd say this is closer to what Jesus was talking about. And we actually had reduced it to something personal when it was meant to be communal. And once we take the teachings of Jesus and just use them to apply to ourselves without seeing them as a way that Jesus was trying to talk to us about how we as persons could engage our society around about us, I think we limit the gospel and reduce the gospel, and hopefully this is to restore the fullness of the gospel. I want people to experience these things in a way that is personal, not just social, but personal and social.
Yes, yeah. And just while we're on this topic, then what in the context of the Gospels actually leads you to that kind of way of understanding the Beatitudes rather than the traditional way we've often read it?
Oh, a really good example is starting right at the beginning about that blessed are the poor in spirit. Now, traditionally, people have interpreted that blessed are the poor of spirit. Mm-hmm. So blessed are those who feel inadequate and in their inadequacy cry to God for help. So it's about a sense, blessed are those who feel anxious. And it's about your own inner anxiety. And once you start with that particular interpretation, then you interpret everything else in totally private terms. But if you read the scriptures carefully, you'll see that in Luke it's talking about the poor, the real poor. And when Jesus talks about blessed are the poor in spirit, he's talking about identifying not just with our own poverty, but with the poverty of others. And in this passage, he's asking us to explore the implications of that. It doesn't say blessed are the poor of spirit. It says blessed are the poor in spirit, those who are in the spirit, identify with the poor and engage in their reality.
This is Open House. Dave Andrews is with us. We're talking about Plan B. That's his book. It's talking about the Beatitudes, those famous sayings of Jesus in his Sermon on the Mount. Talked about blessed are the poor, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the meek, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Okay, Dave, blessed are the merciful.
I think it's really important that this follows on after blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Because you and I know that people can be so self-righteous, they're merciless. And there's a whole lot of groups that are committed to social justice who are relentless in their prosecution of their causes and are anything but merciful. And what I think Jesus is saying here is, I want you to seek for justice, but remember this, all justice is willing to extend the same mercy to others as you would want for yourself. Mm-hmm. And therefore, everything in the struggle for justice has to be freighted with grace.
Yeah, that's a really good point that you've raised, because we see lots and lots of activists who are doing some pretty, sometimes it needs to be radical, but sometimes they're just simply disruptive things just for the sake of getting the point across. And maybe sometimes you need to be, you know, disruptive. But yeah, this is so key, isn't it? Be merciful,
well, a lot of
be graceful.
People haven't dealt with their own issues and they're just getting involved with causes which they can express their frustration through.
Okay.
And it's very destructive. And I think what Jesus is saying is, oh, I want you to seek for justice, but don't forget any social movement that's going to do justice has to have at the core of it a personal commitment to showing the same mercy to others as you would want yourself.
Yeah, it's kind of a crash course in Christian activism tonight. Blessed are the pure in heart.
I think this is of extraordinary importance because once you get involved in causes, there's a tendency to seek publicity. But Jesus is saying, no, the essential issue is integrity. You've got to be committed to these things in spirit and in truth. Whether there's anybody around with a camera to take pictures of what you're doing or not, it's something that you need to be committed to doing yourself, even in the context of total anonymity without any publicity at all. We're called to a life of service and solidarity, of help and of protest. Yeah. It's got to have integrity. We've got to be congruent.
Blessed are the peacemakers.
And I think this is of enormous significance for us because most of the people that we know that have a problem with the whole idea of God in general or Christianity in particular see with great distress that how God has been invoked as someone in whose name we fight wars. And Christians often invoke the name of God to fight battles under the sign of the cross. And I think what Jesus is saying here is, come on, guys. If you really want to be sons and daughters of God, if you want to be children of God, then you need to be like God. And God is not willing that any should perish. And as God's children, we need to show the same grace to others as we would want ourselves. And in a world at war, it means we need to be committed to working for peace. We need to be committed to intervening in violence non-violently, in the gentle, relentless tenderness that Jesus himself displayed.
Well, the last statement of Jesus kind of flips it all on its head anyway, doesn't it? Blessed are those of you who are persecuted.
Well, it's really important. What I say to people here is what Jesus is saying is that we need to be prepared to suffer for the sake of our commitments, but not inflict suffering for the sake of our commitments. And that is what's really important. And that's the last word of Jesus on this issue. And this brings us back to right back at the beginning. It's not about bombing people we don't agree with into democracy and inflicting suffering on them. It's about us being willing to suffer injustice ourselves, to forgive others, to give ourselves to others, to work for change from the inside out, invite others to be a part of that process.
Dave, you've been a social activist, we could say, for quite some years, quite some decades now. How has this kind of re-engagement with Jesus' Beatitudes changed the way that you're doing what you do?
My commitment to the way of Jesus has always been at the heart of my personal growth and social change concerns. People haven't always known that because they've seen my actions and not always talked to me about the secret of my inspiration. What I like about this is that this Plan B gives me the opportunity to unpack the center that sustains my struggle, the Christ who I believe is an enchanting and exciting and an engaging person who calls me to change rather than to try to change other people. And I believe that I need to constantly come back to that center to rediscover that and to cry out to be a person who is being transformed in the process of seeking transformation in my society.
Okay, Dave, well, I'm sure it's going to start some interesting conversation. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Dave Andrews, activist, author of numerous books, the latest of which is called Plan B. If you'd like to follow it further, wecan.b is his website, wecan.b.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.